You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Monday, November 12th. Well, Mason, give him one, just one.
Detroit basketball!
Could have gotten two this weekend, but alas, it was not to be. This is your boy, Matt Shook, a sports writer here in the Motor City, covering the NBA for the Associated Press and the Detroit News, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter across the country for over a decade as well. Thank you for the listen, and also for spreading the word to the Pistons fans in your life as well. Today, we're going to be talking about the games over the weekend, Friday and Sunday, a nice win and a bad loss for the Pistons. We're also going to be talking trades, as there was a big one on Saturday in the NBA, and I got some more ideas and theories and analysis there, and I thought there were some telling comments in the Vince Ellis article from the Free Press over the weekend as well. We're also going to hear from John Beilein, who, as you might recall, the Pistons courted for their open coaching position in the summer after the Michigan coach earned his 801st victory on Saturday night. I was in attendance to watch the Wolverines take down the Holy Cross Crusaders. But give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And give us a like on the Facebook page at Locked On Pistons-MattShook. First, the good news. The Pistons got the win on Friday night in Atlanta. Just a few notes from that one, as it seems like it was a long time ago, mostly because it was a long time ago. But 124-109 on the win, but it was much worse than that. Really a beatdown. Pistons were up all game and stayed that way. 23 points and 11 rebounds for Andre Drummond, including 5 rebounds on the offensive end, so a strong performance from him. Stanley Johnson, 22 points off the bench, was looking to be getting some more comfort there going into Sunday's game anyway. He also had 7 rebounds and 3 assists for Johnson. 16 points for Langston Galloway. Also off the bench, he was 5 of 9 from 3. Stanley was 4 for 9 from 3, by the way. What's Stanley Johnson doing shooting 9 threes? But I guess when you're feeling it, you're feeling it. Also, like I said, just a complete beatdown for the Pistons there. They shot 20 of 47 from 3-point land. I believe a franchise record for attempts in a game, a nice 42.6% from 3-point land, 7 of 28 for the Hawks in that department. So obviously a big win for the Pistons there, and from 3-point land leading to a big win on the scoreboard as well. The Hawks were led by 19 points off the bench from Jeremy Lin. It's a team that's really far, far away from competing, and we saw that on Friday night. Then on Sunday, the Pistons came home and got beat in a matinee at home, 113-103 against the Charlotte Hornets. That's 6-6 on the season for the Pistons right now, and they look exactly like a 6-6 .500 team right now, 3-3 at home, which includes 3 straight home losses after 3 wins to start the season at Little Caesars Arena. Pistons now 7th place in the Eastern Conference playoffs right now. I know that matters right now in early November, by the way. But just 1 game out of 3rd place in the East, but also just a half game out of 10th place in the East. It seems like it's just Toronto and Milwaukee kind of running away with things early on right now, and then everyone else trailing after that. The more bad news, though, for the Pistons, 1-3 in red-letter games, including now just 1-2 at home in those red-letter games after losing to Miami and Charlotte at home. These are the big ones. So the ones I talk about as being teams that they're going to be competing with for maybe some of those last spots in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Got to win those, especially at home. And that did not happen this week for the Pistons, who dropped games on Monday night to the Miami Heat and then Sunday afternoon to the Charlotte Hornets. More bad news. Blake Griffin had maybe his worst game as a Piston, definitely stat-wise, but I can remember some bad efforts last year, too, on Sunday. I remember last year he was like throwing up some threes with no chances of them going in, and I don't know, I just can remember the Atlanta Sunday game stands out to me as like the depths for Blake Griffin and how the Pistons were going at the end of last year. But on Sunday he had 10 points on 4 of 16 shooting, 0 for 5 from 3-point land for Blake Griffin. He was rightfully booted from the game by the officials after a flagrant foul on a cheap shot on an airborne Malik Monk of Charlotte. But Blake was chirping at officials all game long. He was to his credit. He was probably right on a lot of the calls early on in the game. Blake and the officials, though, a weird mix, as we can kind of see from night to night. I remember early on in the season, I was talking about how refreshing it is, maybe after the first couple games, in particular the opener against Brooklyn, how nice it is to have the Pistons to have a star who has the respect of officials around the league. Well, as we're seeing lately, there's other officials in the league that maybe don't have a lot of respect for Blake Griffin. I can remember one of the national conversations about him when he was with the Clippers is he would get knocked around and not get a lot of calls. So Blake Griffin's in that weird place where he's, you know, almost a superstar. We can debate whether he's a star or a superstar till we're blue in the face. But does he get superstar calls is really more important than whether he is or not. And some nights it appears he is. And some nights he isn't. He's one of those difficult guys to officiate. You remember Shaquille O'Neal being probably the most difficult guy in modern NBA history to be officiated, as it seemed like, you know, normal contact didn't affect him as much. And then when he was delivering some blows and vice versa, you didn't really know who to call the foul on. Well, Blake's got that old school power game of basketball, particularly backing down opponents in the low post there and the high post too. So difficult to call and not something that officials deal with on a night-in, night-out basis. So we see some weird mixes, and we'll kind of keep an eye on that as the season goes on. Another problem on Sunday, obviously, continued problem for the Pistons, the shooting. The Pistons were 12 of 45 from three-point land, 26.7%. You take out the Bullock, who shot really well for them, and they were 6 of 36 as a team, which not good. So that would be, without Reggie Bullock, 16.7%. Dwayne Casey said after the game that the analytics folks that he has on staff told him that only 4 were bad three-pointers, so of the attempts. So definitely just not knocking them down so far. I'm sure I could quibble that a few more than 4 were bad three-pointers, but certainly Pistons got to step up and knock down a lot of those open shots. And I've seen a lot of tweets lately about how, especially today, about how this is like the worst shooting team in the NBA, and that's the downfall for the Pistons. And I got to disagree with that. They are not. And first of all, did you see the Hawks the other night? I mean, this is a team that was fifth in the league in the NBA, fifth in the league in three-point percentage last year. And I know a lot of the argument has to do with the fact that Avery Bradley, Tobias Harris, Anthony Tolliver, guys that are no longer on that team, drove up the percentage for the Pistons. But certainly to an extent that is true. Those guys did attempt 35% of the threes from last season. But I crunched the numbers, and for players no longer on the Pistons who attempted a three-pointer last year, if you took all of those guys off of the Pistons ledger there, the Pistons still shot 35.7% from three-point land. So right about that 18-19 slot in the league. When you're taking away two very good three-point shooters in Tobias Harris and Anthony Tolliver, and one in Avery Bradley, who might not be a great three-point shooter, but certainly was hitting them at the portion of the season that he was with the Pistons, about a half season there. So, I don't believe that the Pistons are a terrible three-point shooting team, how they're made up right now. And, of course, we can agree that it's going really badly so far and couldn't be worse in a lot of ways. A lot of that due to the fact that Reggie Bullock, who you consider maybe your best or second best three-point shooter, has been awful so far in that regard, maybe these last couple games notwithstanding. But Luke Kennard is either your other, you know, he's either your best or your second best three-point shooter, and he's hardly played. So you take out the two best shooters on the team. There's a lot of problems with the roster construction about the Pistons, and we'll get into some of those today. But I just don't, and there you can always have more shooting. Any team in the NBA could use more shooting. But I think a lot of this is going to get taken care of on its own. I don't think it's the crippling weakness that maybe a lot of people do. Now, that being said, it's been obviously a horrific slow start for them. They're 27th out of 30 in the NBA in three-point shooting so far this year. But who's worse? It's interesting. Houston, last year's darling, the three-point shooting darlings of the NBA right now, a Western Conference finalist, went to Game 7 last year. They're worse than the Pistons right now. Would you say that they're, you know, one of the worst shooting teams in the league? Obviously, you wouldn't. Denver is worse than them, a 9-4 team right now. And Oklahoma City, who probably will finish worse than the Pistons in threes. A team right now that, by the way, as bad as it's been in Detroit, that team is 3.2 percentage points worse than Detroit. That's a lot. So to be plus worse percentage points than the Pistons right now says a lot. Now, we'll keep an eye on it. I could be proven wrong, and this shooting slide could continue all year, and it could be the thing that breaks the back of this Pistons team, but I don't think that's going to be it. I think it'll level off a little bit. But certainly we're seeing that when the Pistons shoot well and when the other teams don't, they win, vice versa. We can, and that's a pretty good guess as far as the number one stat you might look at after a game, especially this day and age in the NBA and how things are kind of stacked as they are with teams looking to shoot those threes. But some good news for the Pistons. First, Andre Drummond on Sunday, he was fantastic, 23 points and 22 rebounds, including 9 on the offensive glass. I'd give him maybe some crap sometimes and talk about how, you know, the defensive rebounds that he gets are sometimes empty because there's not a lot of teams in the league going for defensive rebounds. And some of those offensive rebounds in some ways for him are a little bit empty too, because he's a lot of times cleaning up his own point blank misses. And he did have a couple of those on Sunday, but just a dominant game overall for him at the backcourt steals as well. Just at times he was in foul trouble early, missed a lot of the early action, but in the third quarter, he was just a great addition for them as they were fighting a lot of things, gave him a lift when they were kind of unraveling early in the second half and gave him a chance to stay in the game for as long as he possibly could. We mentioned before Reggie Bullock had a career high 23 points, 6 of 9 from three. We called him out on Wednesday's podcast as a guy who needed to get things going. He's doing that so far temporarily as of now. And also remedied over the weekend, by the way, for now again, was the slow starts. The Pistons won both of the first quarters against Atlanta and Charlotte, but a whole new batch of problems and some old ones kicking up as well. First of all, the perimeter defense. Ish Smith and Reggie Jackson just not getting it done defensively, especially on Sunday against opposing point guards. We'll talk about that more a little bit later, but Kemba Walker and Tony Parker, both of them, had 24 points apiece to lead the Hornets. We had Nick Carboni on Friday's podcast, my guy from Charlotte TV, but he told us that Tony Parker was doing really well running that second offense and even playing alongside Kemba, taking some of the ball handling responsibilities from him and just playing really solidly in addition to being a mentor for the young guys. And we saw that up close and personal. I didn't know if I believed him. I hadn't seen Charlotte play, and we've seen a little bit of a washed up Tony Parker sometimes these last couple years, obviously dealing with injuries in San Antonio, but just 33 years old still, and some of us that are even older than that like to still think that that's a pretty young age. But Tony Parker, really impressive game for him. Pistons on Wednesday, that's it this week. Just a game on Wednesday at Toronto against the best team in the NBA right now, the Toronto Raptors, Dwayne Casey, and what's sure to be an emotional reunion north of the border. And we'll talk about that game a lot more later this week. But up next, we're going to talk about the big trade on Saturday in the NBA and also mix it up with some trade talk about the Pistons. But is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? Your company could be mentioned right now, right here on Locked On Pistons. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with sponsors that they hear on their favorite podcasts. And our demographic is 98% males with more education and more earning power than traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor Locked On Pistons. Go ahead and email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes!
A little bit later on in the podcast, we will hear from John Beilein, the Michigan coach, after his win on Saturday night against Holy Cross. But Saturday, the big NBA news, Jimmy Butler traded to the Philadelphia 76ers, the disgruntled former Chicago Bulls star, shipped from Minnesota, along with Justin Patton, a project center from Creighton who has been hurt in his two-year career, mostly with the G League when he has been getting in games. Those guys were dealt for a package from the 76ers that included Robert Covington, who is a NBA stats nerd god. They love that guy in advanced stat land. Also Dario Saric, who's been a very effective player for the Philadelphia 76ers for a few years after he was drafted and stashed for at least a year in Europe. Also Jared Bayless to fill some salary, and a 2022 second round pick that might be the one the Pistons traded to the 76ers on draft night this past year. Although I heard that I think it's one of those two picks, whichever one is the highest or lowest, is going to be shipped. Although I'm not even sure that that was the Pistons year, that the one that was shipped was 2022. So take that with a grain of salt. Look that up before you quote me on talking about that. That one of that might end up being one of the Pistons picks that they shipped over there. But trade winds are in the air. Good times for NBA fans as we get to chop all this stuff up and have our own opinions on it. Certainly, it doesn't sound like a lot for Jimmy Butler, who's a very good player in this league, but a guy disgruntled like that on an expiring contract who certainly wasn't going to re-sign in Minnesota, you could see where the offers were probably dwindling as time went on for Tom Thibodeau, and smart for him to probably pull the trigger. If you're Minnesota, obviously you're going to see how this mix works for a little bit, but maybe they're a team looking to trade sometime soon too if they don't feel like they have enough strong pieces. You look at that roster, Laz Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys was tweeting about going 11 deep with that Minnesota roster of very good players. Maybe they could make a similar reverse of a type of trade that they made for the Butler deal and package some guys for a better player if they can add to that core of Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. But I also wanted to point out another move from late Sunday night as I record this from a smart team that is instructive if you're thinking about the Pistons too. A smart team that didn't have a very smart offseason, by the way, and that was the Houston Rockets. They lost Trevor Ariza in free agency to the Phoenix Suns, but replaced him with the likes of James Ennis, who Pistons fans are very familiar with, underwhelmingly so, and Carmelo Anthony, the former star who was having a sad end to his career in a lot of ways with the Oklahoma City Thunder, got bought out in the offseason last year, and then it didn't take him a little bit more than 10 games in Houston before reportedly he's going to be out of there. According to ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, who's reporting that the Houston players and coaches don't expect Anthony to play with the Rockets again. That was quick, record time for Melo to fall out of favor. We'll see where he pops up, maybe with fellow Banana Boat star LeBron James, who might be piling up some more of the retreads after Tyson Chandler was dropped by the Phoenix Suns. And apparently Chris Paul's presence in Houston as a buddy of Carmelo Anthony was not enough to keep him around for more than, you know, an eighth of a season or so. So quick move-in by Daryl Morey and the Houston Rockets. All of that to say that if you have fatal flaws, if you see big problems, don't let them fester. And don't see how it plays out. Now, this isn't a situation like Stan Van Gundy where he put this roster together. It's kind of incumbent on him to coach it up. Ed Stefanski in his front office and Arne Tellem, who I believe is probably pulling a lot of the levers personnel-wise with the front office these days. I think that these guys would not be hesitant to swing a big deal if they saw one out there, or even a smaller deal as well, shake things up in this roster, which I think has a lot of flaws. And along those lines, I will point out an article from Vince Ellis of the Free Press this weekend, who, as I've talked about on the podcast, is the local reporter most tuned in to the Pistons front office source-wise, and he should be. He's the one of that group who has been on the beat the longest. Well, Vince, in an article on Sunday kind of recapping the Butler trade and what that meant for the Pistons and their trade possibilities going forward, he said that a front office source said the Pistons would give it 20 games with the current roster before exploring trade options. Now, what does that mean? Well, you're going to give it 1/4 of the season before the new regime makes any big decisions, but it also, to me, and this is reading between the lines, to me, entertains the idea that they're at least talking about what the process would be to make trades. So maybe something is being talked about, or maybe some things are being thought about in the front office. And of course, when you have an active front office of guys making, I got to believe, six figures at a lot of different levels, and that front office staff, that there's probably a lot of thinking going on, a lot of tinkering going on, especially when it's not your roster that you put together. And there are players, there is talent, there are pieces that can be dealt. And as we talked about earlier this season, the Pistons can trade their first-round pick. I just want to throw that out there again. I know that that had been talked about as something that can't be done by the Pistons, but the rule is that you can't trade consecutive first-round picks for future seasons. And now that that 2018 draft has passed, the 2019 first-round pick is no longer a second future season. It's now the first next season. You can trade your first-round pick every season if you do it the day after the draft. It's a rule that the NBA put in that you can't trade future first-round picks consecutively when they're already dealt. Now that 2018 no longer a factor in those kind of considerations. Well, I don't think you need to see 20 games to figure out that there's some problems with the Pistons. And I talked last week about Andre Drummond and suggested maybe trading him to get more shooting and free things up inside for Blake Griffin, who shows a big resurgence in the first few games of the season, although tailing off these last couple games. Now, Dre has been great since I did that podcast last week. Maybe he was listening and it motivated him a little bit. What's up, Dre? Good luck with the rest of the year. But that was an example of shaking things up and unclogging things for Blake, who has had that strong start to the season. I wasn't saying trade Drummond was addition by subtraction or anything like that. As I've said, very good player. Looks like he's angling for another All-Star, his third All-Star appearance possibly coming up this year. Got the 5 20-20s. And like I said, just an outstanding week after we talked about dealing him on last Monday's podcast. But similarly, I think that when you talk about the offensive problems with maybe Blake and Andre perhaps always being at least a little bit, awkward as far as an offensive pairing without having those guys given as much room as they might need in the paint to maneuver, kind of some overlapping skills, especially as playmakers from the post position as well. I think the biggest defensive problem for the Pistons, kind of on the other side of the coin from those offensive problems, they were exposed on Sunday. Ish Smith and Reggie Jackson, both good NBA players, both valuable pieces who should continue playing roles in rotations for NBA teams, but neither of them are good enough defensively at point guard for the Pistons right now. And that's one of the problems with the constructions of the roster when you look at the two guys who are getting your main point guard minutes, if not all of your point guard minutes, save for a couple minutes here and there from Jose Calderon lately and maybe from Bruce Brown down the road. But when you have two guys that can't play defense at your number one position on the court, that's a problem. I mean, ideally, again, you can win with those guys, you can play with both of those guys, but maybe not together. You know, maybe you have your backup point guard being stronger defensively or vice versa. It's tough to have two point guards that are getting dusted by point guards all day long. We saw that with Tony Parker and Kemba Walker with the Charlotte Hornets on Sunday. You might look to deal one of those guys, and I wanted to kind of open it up to you guys, especially Reggie Jackson. His value gets better and better by the day as his contract ticks down to expiring at the end of next season. But like I said, on Sunday, and I saw this on social media as well from you guys, I think the Detroit Bad Boys account tweeted something, and all the replies were just kind of fed up and maybe done with the Reggie Jackson era in some ways. And I know a lot of you guys are out there are done. But just malaise from him on Sunday, the times that he just holds the ball until he forces a shot at the end of the shot clock or forces someone to take a shot when he held it for 16 seconds and just dumped it off to someone. I recall a first half possession on Sunday where he just kind of held it in the corner, didn't really make any moves, and then made a little bit of a non-penetrating dribble to the right and threw it to Stanley Johnson, who had to rush a three-pointer that had no chance of going in. Really, Reggie Jackson being one of the easier guys in the league to defend from a team standpoint. Defensively, obviously, he got toasted again. Kemba Walker and Tony Parker turning the clock back a little bit. Reggie was arguing with the refs as opponents are bringing it up the court against him, and then they're about to go by him once again. So it just gets – when Reggie's bad and when he's going through one of these games – it's really hard to watch, and as Pistons fans, we've seen it for many years now, and 2016, notwithstanding when he was very healthy and very good for this team, it's been a slog at time. And when I think about the Pistons, and we've talked about this in the past, this is Chauncey's team, this is Joe's team, defensive guards that set the tone for a defensive team, and I see that it seems like Ed Stefanski kind of agrees with that in the Arne Tellem new front office by bringing in Khyree Thomas and Bruce Brown in the second round this year, guys who could become players for this team possibly sooner rather than later, with their defense being their calling card as NBA skills already for both of those guys. Now, so I'm opening it up to you guys. Any trade ideas out there? Looking at Reggie Jackson making $17 million this year, $18 million next year. Ish Smith being very valuable at a low salary number, $6 million this year, and at an expiring deal. I mean, you could even tack him along with a bad contract. He's a pretty valuable asset, especially as a guy who can make some plays off the bench in short spurts for contending type of teams. So probably similar. I mean, Ish probably being a more valuable asset than Reggie. Reggie certainly being a guy who can get more dead contracts in return. But what can we do to shake up this backcourt if you wanted to do that and get some more defense from the point guard position? Do you guys have any ideas there? I was going to play with the trade machine tonight, but it's late already on Sunday night. We got a lot of time to fill this week. So I'm going to open it up to you guys. Send along your trade ideas or Ish Smith, Reggie Jackson, or maybe none of them. Stay put. Maybe I'm wrong. Tell me I'm wrong. Or maybe they need at least those 20 games to evaluate something. But I think you could go back to prior years and see that Ish Smith and Reggie Jackson, as far as the the number one point guard position for your team, just not good enough as a combo defensively. So send those along those ideas to the Google Voice number, 810-666-1546. Go ahead and text those along or call that number and leave a voicemail. We'll play those this week. Again, that's 810-666-1546. Trade ideas. Get out the trade machine. Let me know what you think. Ways to shake up the Ish Smith and Reggie Jackson backcourt. What are your ideas? By the way, the Locked On Podcast Network, we are doing unprecedented things on Twitter and Instagram. On Twitter, follow Locked On NBA Net, and you'll get all the Locked On Podcast Network local hosts covering the NBA on one feed. It is amazing during games, breaking news, and to get the local perspective around the league as well. On Instagram, Locked On NBA Net is giving you the biggest stories in one-minute bursts on your Instagram stories and longer cuts on the feeds as well. So make sure to follow Locked On NBA Net on both Twitter and Instagram. But up next, we're going to hear from John Beilein, the Michigan coach, and talk a little bit about the former Pistons coaching candidate as well. That'll be up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. Coach John Beilein got win number 801 as a college basketball coach on Saturday night against the Holy Cross Crusaders. I was there covering it for the Associated Press. And before the game, they played a nice tribute video for John Beilein. All sorts of former players chimed in. You know, the big names, Mo Wagner, Glenn Robinson III, all sorts of old Michigan players. Here's how Coach reacted to seeing that video when asked about it in the postgame press conference.
Yeah, that was emotional for me. I didn't expect that. I didn't know what was going on. I knew that they were going to give me a ball, and they said there's a video too. And then to have all those guys talk, that was really, I mean, it got to me a little bit, right? And so so thankful for that they were so nice to do that. And you know how I felt about it. We asked last week. It certainly is a great accomplishment for whoever has been around me for those 800, including Kathleen. To be with us in that, it's really something. But that was well done, I thought. That was pretty neat. I might watch it again one day.
Beilein referencing his wife, Kathleen, who was in the back of the press conference as he was talking on Saturday night after the game. But this is a guy who's having a great time in college, back on campus in Ann Arbor, where he belongs, really. It was a big celebration for his 800th win, which was the first win of the season on Tuesday as they picked up the win against, I believe, Norfolk State. So John Beilein, who had a tumultuous offseason with the heart surgery that he had, which had him sit out the Michigan basketball trip to Spain, and also the dalliance with the Detroit Pistons, who had the coaching opportunity open before hiring Dwayne Casey. Certainly an intriguing candidate for the Pistons to look at in John Beilein, and glad that they did their due diligence. But I think all parties are better off with John Beilein, a hardcore college coach, staying on campus, staying at the place where he belongs, at the University of Michigan. It would have been interesting to see how he would have handled the pro game, the pro players, the adjustments that he would have to make to his coaching style, to his X's and O's and all that stuff. He's obviously a fantastic basketball coach. If you're a Michigan or Michigan State fan or whatever else you root for, you can't deny that. But good to see John back on campus. And here he's having a good time, and it was evidenced by him receiving the painting of himself that was painted at halftime of the game on Saturday night. Here's how he reacted to seeing it and receiving it as a gift from that artist who did the speed painting of him in about 5 minutes at halftime. Here's John commenting about how many paintings of himself he has at the house.
That would be the first. That would be the first. And it is so nice. What are we going to do with that, dear? Where is it going to go?
We put it right over the fireplace. Right over the fireplace.
I don't think it's going over. I know it's not going over a fireplace.
Life is certainly good when you have 801 wins as a head coach heading into Wednesday's game against Villanova, a rematch of the championship game from last season in the Final Four, John Beilein and the Michigan Wolverines. Congrats to Coach, by the way, from the Locked On Pistons podcast. But again, this is your boy, Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Thanks to you guys for listening. Let me know your trade possibilities. Get in touch with us at 810-666-1546. Text along your trade ideas. Leave a voicemail as well, as we have a little bit of a dead week here with the Pistons. Wednesday on the road in Toronto, but nothing other than that one game, the Dwayne Casey reunion. So lots to talk about this week, and we hope to stay with us here on the podcast. And thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great start to the week.